At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's episode number 50 of the Deferred Collusion podcast, Brandon. This is a big... I wanted to surprise you with this today because I didn't tell you before we recorded that today is episode 50. And, you know, it's been a beautiful journey with you. What a wonderful ride it's been. Thank you to all of you who have joined. We're halfway to the century mark and many more. It is May 14th. This is Deferred Collusion. I'm back. It's me, Jesse Rowe, the King of Crespi, joined by the Lord Paramount of Torrance, California, Brandon Bullinger. What's up, buddy? How are you? Happy 50th.
Game Boog, how are you, dude? That was a tasty little surprise. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you very much. 50 eps in, man. It's been quite the journey. Jess, let me ask you real quick. After 50 episodes, what have you learned most about yourself?
I've learned that I still don't know how to properly operate a live stream camera because I just Whoa. If I look a little different today, it's because I've upgraded a little bit. I have an external camera now, not just my 720p webcam. So Whoa. I've upgraded myself here in the world, and I still don't know how to operate it. So that's what I've learned. But what I have learned with you is to stop saying the word so much. I think that I have to stop saying if I keep doing it, I apologize. And now if I draw an attention to it, I apologize even more.
Oh, man, I'm right there with you. So much yeah. dead space. And as a father of a young child, I'm really aware of how much I curse. And darn it, do I want to do better. But it's fucking hard, man, let me tell you.
It is fucking hard. It's very fucking hard. And you know what's very fucking hard, Brandon?
What?
Or you know what's not hard?
Whoa.
Liking and subscribing and commenting and sharing this video because we are shameless sellouts. We're slaves to the algorithm. Please help us out. Please share. Please comment, subscribe. Do what you can to help us out.
We have not been serving the algorithm as much as it demands lately. So yeah. This is our plebal. That's a mix between feeble and plebes because we're feeble plebes. It's our plebal attempt at, reconciling with the god of algorithms. But Jesse, enough of that malarkey. Let's talk ball. Jess, my goodness gracious, the end of an era. Mm-hmm. The longest tenured Dodger position player, Austin Barnes, was DFA'd by the Dodgers today. Well, technically, after the 11-1 loss against the Athletics, I was going to say Sacramento Athletics, but
yeah,
against the Athletics.
Well, if you ask the umpire at the A's game the other day, they're still in Oakland because I don't know if you heard that, but on the broadcast of the umpire, they were doing an umpire's challenge and like a booth review, and he calls in, he's like, "Oakland wins the challenge," and he puts Good. The phone, and then it's like, "Oh shit, did I just say Oakland?"
Dude, you dead named him. It's crazy. Yeah. It's just absurd that it's funny. Like a whole community lost a baseball team because of one man's greed. Anyways, enough about that douche. Austin Barnes, God. It's one of those things. Ask any longtime Dodger fan and they'll tell you, I don't know how he managed to be on the team so long. But
I love Austin Barnes with all my heart, dude. This guy, he was a coach. Let's make no mistake about it. He is a coach on the team, or was a coach on the team. He was not a player. He was a player coach, essentially. He was Kirk Rambis of the Dodgers, you know what I mean? And
wow, great callback.
Just not a good statistical player whatsoever. I think his career OPS is like sub six. I could be way off on that, but I mean,
Jesse, I'll tell you real quick.
Yeah.
So Austin Barnes was traded for in 2015. Oh,
660. I apologize. 660 yeah, OPS. Sub six this season, though.
Yep. Yeah. It was traded for in 2015 in the trade that saw D. Gordon and Miguel Vargas head to Miami, and also brought over Kike Hernandez. But in those 11 seasons since that trade, Barnes has played in 612 games. As you mentioned, a 660 OPS, hit for a 223 average, and was most importantly a two-time World Series champion for the native of Riverside. Barnesy, dubbed the captain from Mookie Betts, like you said, a coach. I mean, dude, think about some of the talent he's played with, from Andre Ethier, Chase Utley, AJ Ellis, the pitchers that he's caught, you know, from Max Scherzer to Kershaw, obviously famously Kershaw's favorite catcher after the departure of AJ Ellis. Matt Kemp, dude, just the name of stars that he's gone through and has got to catch is just unreal, man.
Yeah, and I think that we're probably going to give Barnes more love than, like, a lot of people, like a lot of Dodger podcasts would. But, like, I want to for a very specific reason, because you mentioned A.J. Ellis. A.J. Ellis was Clayton Kershaw's longtime, or just to start his career, his personal catcher, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Light-hitting catcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Dodgers ended up trading A.J. Ellis to the Phillies, and I remember it affected Kershaw. He was openly upset. Barnes was kind of the trade to sort of replace that for Kershaw. He was essentially brought in to sort of like appease that situation a little bit. But also the Barnes trade, you mentioned the Dodgers trading D. Gordon and then somebody else to the Marlins.
Miguel Vargas
for not Vargas, Rojas. To get Enrique Hernandez and Austin Barnes, but I believe they also got left-handed pitcher Andrew Heaney in that deal, who they swapped to get Howie Kendrick from the Angels. If I remember correctly, that was part of that deal. And that trade for Barnes and for Kike and ultimately Howie Kendrick was kind of like the first move that the Andrew Friedman era made when he took over. That was like the first one, other than signing Jimmy Rollins to be a stopgap before Corey Seager came along.
Wow.
It was that trade to get Barnes, Kike, and then Howie Kendrick. And I think that it was a signal about that the Dodgers were going to start prioritizing character guys in the clubhouse, you know, like Austin Barnes. It was talent, but it was also very specific type of workmanlike mindset and just true ball players that Friedman wanted to get in. And I think that's what Austin Barnes represents more to me than anything, is that he was just a through and through team player, like no bullshit, all sacrifice for the betterment of the team. That kind of guy sets the tone. And I think that he's, you know, he's not going to go down as like a statistical favorite in any category. He's not going to go down for any specific memory. I'll always remember Barnesy bloops, you know, like texting my friends, like, we need a Barnesy bloop right now just to get on base type of thing. But I think just the kind of guy that just shows up, first guy there, last guy to leave, that's Austin Barnes. So
absolutely. A guy who did have a seemingly like kind of like tough little feel about him, right? In a hard-nosed type player, like you said, kind of like a very, very much every man. But, you know, like you said, maybe not known for any big memories, but I would disagree. I think famously knocking out Blake Snell. I forget what game that was. Was it game five?
Game six, 2020
World Series. Yeah, and then he would end up scoring on a pass ball.
And caught the final out from Julio Urias, who we don't want to. Unfortunately, we're not celebrating in this video, but he did catch the final.
Not be named. I don't want to get punched in the face, but I'm just kidding.
He caught strike three, breaking the long spell of no World Series championships for the Dodgers in 2020.
For a long time, that was actually my my background screen on my phone. It was like Barnsley with the hands in the air, Urias like screaming on the mound, and him like
that might be the thumbnail. Maybe not the Urias part, but maybe we'll make Barnsley the thumbnail. It depends, because there is somebody else. There's another aspect of this story that Dodger fans
that.
Might be
and
a
Jesse,
little bit more excited about. But go
and
ahead.
And Jesse, you know what? I'm really glad you said it that way, because, you know, just like this changing of the seasons, you know, winter gives way to the thaw, which gives way to spring. And that is what we're experiencing right now, right? You know, some fresh growth, some new life on that Dodgers team. They're calling up a top prospect, a kid named Dalton Rushing. You may have heard of him. I've been pretty fired up about this kid. He's seen some limited play in the bigs. I don't know how many games, but just a few I think he's been called up for over the last like year or so.
No. Dalton Rushing, this would be his major league debut.
Would it be? No. I'm getting mixed up with somebody.
You might be thinking of I have no idea who you're thinking of, but either way, the point is he has gotten some spring training time, but this will be his major league debut. He is the number one prospect in the Dodgers system. There's some debate about what he is like across Major League Baseball. Like ESPN has him 16th ranked overall prospect, where other lists have him like 12th, 13th. But he's number one in the Dodgers system. And there just a little update here on him before you get into like his stats and stuff. He is starting tomorrow. He will be behind the plate. He's expected to play twice a week behind the plate, according to Fabian Ardaya, per Dave Roberts. But Roberts says he doesn't expect Rushing to play any outfield while he's up, which is what we were speculating, that he would come in and potentially maybe play some left field, get some reps in there to get him some more time. But it looks like he's just kind of going to be filling in for Barnes for the time being. So,
crazy. Just the turning of the door. I don't know who I thought he was that I saw like hit last season, I'm guessing. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't know. It could just be like, maybe you're thinking of Outman because he played a little bit.
There was a prospect.
Yeah,
like
I know it. Right.
That was
I know
what you're
talking about.
Guy. He was like an older AAA guy. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not big on the.
I'm not big on the prospects. You know what I mean? The minor leaguers, but
I have been following this guy though.
I am stoked about Dalton Rushing. In 107 ABs this season, Jess. Rushing is hitting a .308 average with a .938 OPS and 5 homers for OKC. Not too bad. Like you said, Barnes was hitting sub, 600 OPS on the 42 plate appearances this year. And it just, looked overmatched at the plate for a while now. So, it's great to get more young blood, but Jess, does this feel like the youth movement is on officially for the Dodgers?
Well, I mean, not quite, because, we have to consider the fact that he's just a backup right now to Will Smith, right? Mm-hmm. And then where are the youth spots going to be when Teoscar comes back, when Edmund comes back, it seems more to me, more than anybody, like I feel like Kim Hae-sung, I apologize, would get more reps than Rushing this year, most likely. This is going to be the year of Kim Hae-sung more so than it's going to be of Dalton Rushing, I would say, because depending on what happens with Michael Conforto, because if he continues to struggle, then maybe, maybe they'll consider putting Rushing in the in left field or something and getting him some more reps there. But one note about Rushing, just like looking at his stats here that I really like, is his walk rate is really good. He's gotten in the minor leagues 179 walks across 265 games.
I like that.
179 to 265. That's basically what that is like. That is like 3 out of every 4.5 games he's drawing a walk. That's incredible stuff. And this year he has 21 in 31 games in AAA. So that's a 424 on base percentage. So obviously we expect some like recession there. We're not expecting him to be a 424 on base guy quite yet. But, I think that's like a really good sign for where this guy's floor could possibly be, is that even if he struggles like getting hits and homers, he's still going to be a guy that has good at bats and gets on base. So that's where he's going to have a good floor there.
That excites me. You know, love just a good eye at the dish. I mean, you look what it's done for Muncy, right? You know, struggles aside from this season, it's been that elite eye and that three true outcomes, you know, to make pitchers pay, that has made him, you know, such a formidable at bat with just piss poor average, but an 8-something OPS year in, year out has been fantastic. I'm not saying that's going to be Rushing's profile, but just, you know, an eye.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. So the Dalton rushing era is about to begin, which is exciting just because I think it's been a while since we've had a top prospect. It's been since Gavin Lux that the Dodgers have had a true number one prospect that I think is like universally recognized as one of the best prospects in baseball. Mm. Not since Gavin Lux do I remember. I mean, of course, there is Roky Sasaki, which we are going to get to in a second here. But Roky was the number one prospect in the Dodgers system. And I think the number two prospect in baseball before the season started. But of course, we know that, like, that's a free agent signing more than anything, right? Because he was already playing professional ball in Japan, but he was still technically considered a prospect, so that is worth noting. But Dalton rushing is coming to the dish for the Dodgers.
Jesse, just the last thing about a top prospect. The last time I saw a top prospect debut, it was after Jimmy Rollins went down and the Dodgers called up a young kid by the name of Corey Seager. Jess, ever heard of him, dude? I think you have. But you know why that's so memorable to me, dude? It was like my first date with my now wife's like friends, like her friend group. And we went to a Dodger game and stuff.
Right.
And like some of her friends had kids. I was like, oh, great. I'm sitting with these kids. I'm talking to kids. I'm talking to ball. And trying to tell them how monumental it is that this kid, Corey Seager, just called up. I'm like, hey, he's going to be super, super good. Like, watch out for him. And it's pretty iconic that he was replacing potentially, you know, future Hall of Famer Jimmy Rollins. But that's what young prospects do, dude. They make memories for young couples.
I actually have that. I mean, that's a beautiful story, by the way. I'm sad you've never shared that with me before. But I do have a nice little story about a top prospect of yesteryear. When Bryce Harper was coming up as like one of the all-time ranked prospects ever, like in the history of baseball, I remember that, right? He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated and all that shit.
Yeah, he was like a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, exactly. And he made his debut at 19 years old for the Washington Nationals at Dodger Stadium. Mm. And I was there in attendance that day. And I saw his first major league hit. He hit a triple to center field that like bounced off the wall over Matt Kemp's head, I believe. And he got a triple out of it. That was like really cool. I remember being there, like kind of like looking to my friends, and I was like, that was kind of fucking cool to see that happen. You know what I mean? Yeah, like I feel like that was special. You know, like that guy is going to be different. So that's one of my favorite prospect stories. But speaking of what the Dodgers' top prospect, Roky Sasaki. He is going down. He's going to the IL. He's got a shoulder impingement, according to the Dodgers.
Is that how you say it? Impingement or impingement?
It's impinge, like impingement. Mm. So I think it's impingement. Mm. He's going to the IL. There is no they do not have a timeline for return right now, which sucks. But Dave Roberts did answer some questions about whether he expects a minor league stint, and he says he doesn't. Well, he kind of leaves it a little open, but if you remember correctly, you pointed this out to me, Brandon. In the last episode, I had theorized that the Dodgers were likely going to come up with an injury for Roky and try to get him some time off and then get some minor league rehab assignments in for him, which is generally like a boost of confidence assignment in major leagues without sending them down. You're kind of sending them down without sending them down. So I do think we're going to see Roky pitch a few games in the minor leagues, but they'll be deemed rehab assignments. That's my theory here.
Old Sherlock Rowe is on the case, ladies and gents. we got to pull that clip just for anybody that missed that episode last week. But yeah, Jesse called this. And you know what? Why I think there's even some extra smoke to the fire of your burning conspiracy is that they're using an injury with a paper trail, Jess.
They are.
Saying it's the same injury that bugged Roke last season in Japan. So it does make sense. The caveat to that, as I'm sure you're aware, is that for his meetings with teams, he was asking them about his velocity and why it was ticking down and what they can do to help him get it back. So maybe this is a part of that. Maybe this is like when the Dodgers signed Walker Buehler after a Tommy John surgery, knowing that he was going to be, you know, a beast. And maybe that's what they saw in Roki, and we're all just kind of caught up in the, you know, what's under the hood, and this guy's throwing 100-something mile an hour with this crazy off-speed splitter and all this arm talent, the Japanese Paul Skeens. Don't get me wrong, I'm still all aboard the hype train. But the fact of the matter is that he just hasn't lived up to that that dynamic hype of like a young ace that just kind of walks in. Jess, last week we also talked about, I don't think it's kind of fair to hold him to that standard because he's not and was not expected to be an ace on this team.
Right.
But I think we all expect a little bit better than a, what is he at, a 4.72 ERA?
Yeah, and in his last start, I was reading this article by Bob Nightingale about Pete Alonso, and I've fallen in love with Bob's blurbs at the bottom of his articles.
Love a blob blurb.
And he mentions that Dodgers rookie Roki Sasaki's electric fastball still hasn't shown up since coming from Japan this season. So in his last start against Arizona, he was sitting 94-96, which, you know, he was throwing 101, 100 in the World Baseball Classic. 96 is like still okay, but with his fastball profile, it's just not where you want it to be. You need it to be a little bit harder because he doesn't have great, we mentioned this last episode, he doesn't have great ride on his fastball. So because of that, he needs a little extra velocity. But because his 94-96 fastball was so pedestrian in his last start, he faced 20 batters, didn't generate a single swing and miss, and didn't strike out a single batter, yielding a 4.72 ERA on the season. So that's pretty telling to me that he's just having trouble missing bats, which is kind of his MO. This is his bread and butter, is missing bats, and it's making his splitter much less effective because his fastball is so vulnerable right now. And I think that this is exactly what Roki needed. He needed a respite. He needed a rest. He needed to get a break, go down to the minor leagues, get his confidence back. And the way you do that is with a little phony, not a phony injury, but a little injured list stint that requires a rehab start or two. So,
yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. There was a little bit more work that needed to be done. Dave was talking about that and saying that Roki wasn't really bringing up that he wasn't feeling well until it was really going to impair his pitching, that he wanted to stick it out because there had been a rash of injuries to Dodgers starting pitching. So whether that is, you know, the truth is somewhere in between both of those things, like he's been injured for a while, or maybe it is just convenient timing for a kid who needs to develop maybe a third pitch to be more effective.
Yep.
Who's not trying to blow his arm out like so many other pitchers have. Geez, the closer for the Angels, Ben Joyce, just went down with season-ending shoulder surgery today, as of time of recording. What is it? May 12th. Yeah, it's May 14th. I'm done. Yeah. Jeez Louise, May 14th.
Come on, this get it together, buddy.
Flying, brother. Yep. It's nuts.
It is.
Yeah. So as Roki goes down to the IL for a indeterminate amount of time, we're left to look at his 1-1 record, 4.27 ERA, with 24 Ks in 34 and a third innings. I think it's only up from here, brother. But Jess, I just want to ask that question one more time. Do you think Roki hits 100 Ks and 22 starts this season?
This is dissuading me I think that he's going to fall a little bit short of that, because I think that they're going to hold him out for like a few weeks here and just let him sort of like build up some strength and then do his rehab start. So I just don't know if he's going to pitch enough innings in games. I think maybe 22 starts, maybe. But even with the Dodgers doing a 6-man rotation now, I mean, Yamamoto, like, he's not even pitching. Like, he's 1 out of every 6 games, you know. So I just find that kind of a tall task for him at this point. But I do still believe in Roki, and I'm not going to be giving up on him anytime soon. But there is some help on the way here, Brando.
That's right. Because
Clayton Kershaw is coming back on the 17th. And, I mean, the way I'm looking at this is, I know a lot of Dodger fans have been seeing it in some social media comments, like, why do we need him back? Like, just let it go. Like, guys, right now where we're at with injuries, I'm pretty fucking happy to have Clayton Kershaw on the team right now to become, like, even if he's a 3.7 ERA guy at this point in his career, I've heard some reports that he's only throwing 87, 88 miles an hour in minor leagues or so in his rehab starts, which is like, oh boy. You know what I mean? You know, it makes you a little concerned, but I'm happy to have him. He's one of the he's the best of all time in a Dodger uniform, and he's gonna help the team. Like, he's going to eat some innings for this team, which is so depleted by injuries right now. And to have him in that clubhouse, it's so, for Roki to be around Kershaw, for Shohei to have Kershaw there, for the, you know, Blake Snell to be, you know, just, it's, you want to have Clayton Kershaw in the clubhouse for this team, and I think it's it can only mean good things for the Dodgers. Even if he's not pitching games in October, we need him pitching games now, and that's just a fact. So.
Yeah, man, you're getting the Fonz in the clubhouse. Kershaw returns May 17th against the Halos. It's huge. It's exciting. I don't know. In 21 innings with 3 different affiliates, Kershaw pitched a 2.57 ERA, gave up 12 hits, 6 runs, 5 walks, but 16 Ks. So, Jess, I'm thinking maybe that slow stuff is playing right now, dude. When everybody else is throwing gap, give them a different
bro,
look.
You give know? Me a little, give me a little Clayton Kershaw in his Tommy Glavin era. You know what I mean?
His Dick Mountain era.
His Andy Pettit era. You know what I mean? Like, give me that 86, 87 mile an hour cheese, bro. Come on, dude.
Limburg.
And by the way, like, let's just not forget, back in 23, he had an excellent fucking season before he got shelled by the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
To a tune of a 2.46 over 24 starts. Last year, not so good. He had a 4.5, but it was only over 7 starts before he got hurt, you know? So it's obviously not good, but...
And look, he said it himself. He didn't want injury to be the reason why he quit playing. He wants to go out on a shield. He wants to go out on his own terms. And that's a man determined. And we've seen a determined Clayton Kershaw, you know, be as dominant a force as we've ever seen on the mound. So while I'm not expecting, you know, 2014 MVP Kersh, I am expecting, like, you know, somewhere maybe even south of 3, I think, is the, like, high hopes, but like you said, realistically, like a 3.7 ERA, I'm fired up about it.
And by the way, Brandon, 32 strikeouts away from 3,000.
So we
get to get that this season, assuming catastrophic injury doesn't happen. Knock on wood here, but Clayton Kershaw throwing his 3,000th strikeout this season. Come on, you got to be down with it. All in a Dodger uniform, you have to be excited about that.
Yeah, dude, that's one of those, like, you can't, like, help but get romantic about baseball type Johns. I just love the guy. It's super rad, and I really hope we get the opportunity to see him do something special this year. It'd be great to see him a little dominant. But dude, doesn't it feel like everybody's got to, like, snap back into shape, like, oh fuck, Kersh is here, like, okay,
yeah, like, it's like dad's home,
exactly. Dude, like, oh man, the boss is back, like,
gotta
keep those lunch breaks tight.
The boss is back from vacation. It's like, all right, we went from having, you know, you know, we were all leaving at 4:30, now we got to leave at 5, you know what I mean?
Right.
it's all that shit. The only downside of all of this here is just the amount of injuries the Dodgers have had, because it's truly remarkable. Once again, I mean, this is the second season in a row that this has happened here. But, I mean, with Sasaki going down, the Dodgers have already had Snell and Glasnow go down along with Sasaki. So that's three out of the, you know, six, you know, the fearsome six, whatever you want to call it, that the Dodgers had projected going into the season. Half of that rotation is already down, and we're not even 1 month into the fucking season, and or we're just over one month into the season. And, you know, they've already lost Trinan. Evan Phillips just went down. Gratterall is still down. Kopech has been rehabbing, so he's coming back soon, but he went down to start the year. River Ryan out for the year, Gavin Stone, Kyle Hurt, Emmett Sheehan, Michael Grove. Just the list goes on and on and on and on. And now Teo and Edmund. But specifically the pitchers, Brandon, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but is there something – are the Dodgers doing something wrong here? Because I've been seeing that comment going around a lot, and I'm just wondering – do the Dodgers enjoy hurting pitchers? Is this like, is this kind of just what they do? Is this what analytics, is this analytics kind of like ruining pitchers' arms? Like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Jesse, we've talked about this at nauseam, but I was listening to one of the greats talk about this a little bit. Oral Hershiser was on the Talk Dodgers to Me pod, and they were asking him about injuries, and he was saying that I think that people are practicing too hard and that everything is measured and you're always kind of competing with yourself and you're always tinkering and you're always pushing yourself to get to that next level. And your arm just really can't hold out for, you know, max effort every day, you know, pitch or whatever, every workout at max velocity for X amount of times. And then you try and beat that. You know what I mean? It's while the gains have been, you know, undeniable for young pitchers in the sport all over the country, the risks are undeniable as well. And we're seeing that with the unprecedented amount of Tommy John surgeries, younger and younger. And, you know, it's like ACLs and stuff like that in basketball or football, and how many young careers have been robbed because of, you know, young ligaments being shredded because of overuse. So while that's not exactly what we're talking about here with pros, you know, it is, you know, because it is all a part of this system that is, you know, linked like so many chains.
Yeah.
But Jess, I don't think anything's going to change for a while. I think that's just kind of the era of ball we're in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's more so just seems like the Dodgers have had some maybe bad luck with it compared to other teams. I know that other teams have obviously lost some pitchers. Like, we know Garrett Cole's out for the year. We know that there is some stuff going on with other teams, but it just seems like the Dodgers have had a real tough time with keeping pitchers healthy. And part of that is signing pitchers that have had health problems in the past. You know, Snell, Glasnow, Roki, Shohei, you know, they have signed a lot of guys that were maybe perhaps more available because of their injury history. That's why the Dodgers were able to outspend other teams on some of these players. But regardless of that, it's the hens are coming home to roost. Is that the saying that they're, you know, this
the
is
chickens are coming home to roost. Yeah. The hens are coming. Yeah. I don't know.
I think you said that last week.
I said it and I was like, what am I even saying here?
Yeah. Either way, it seems like this is
let us know in the comments.
Yeah. Yeah. If we have that saying wrong, please let me know. Cause I'm fucking whatever. Regardless, let's focus on the good. Kershaw's coming back, but, we're going to move off the Dodgers here because we did get some pretty big news this morning, and I don't want to spend a long time on it, but the greatest or the hit king of Major League Baseball, Pete Rose, has been reinstated. He's Hall of Fame eligible now. Now that he's dead, Brandon, he is Hall of Fame eligible. And that's specifically what Rob Manfred said, or what the new commissioner's rule on this is that if you're Hall of Fame ineligible, the new rule is that you're eligible once you're dead. What do you think about it?
I guess banned for life means just that. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess what's the fucking point of banning somebody? Like, if like, hey, once you're dead, we can talk about how good of a guy you were and how I would have let you date my sister. But when you were alive, you're a rotten, dirty scoundrel. Get away from our minivan, sir. You get what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, so what's going to happen? Like, do we think that like Barry Bonds is going to be eligible once he's dead? Is that what's going to happen here?
Probably. Yeah. I'm going to guess. I mean, I don't know. I think there are a lot of people that would vote for Barry Bonds today before they would Pete Rose today.
Bonds is eligible. I'm sorry. I believe he's just not being put on the list. Is that what it is? Is he eligible, but he's just not being put on? Like, Pete Rose was, like, ineligible. He's, like, permabanned, basically. Yeah. I think that's the way it is. So I might have that wrong. But regardless of that, you know, there's a couple of points here that are important because, obviously, like, if you're the hit king of Major League Baseball, like, you should be remembered as, like, the greatest hitter. Or you should be remembered in the Hall of Fame history books as having the most hits. That does not mean that you should be put into the Hall of Fame as a person, as a human being, because, you know, we've tried to set these, like, examples of being, like, a good person off the field, like, matters in terms of your Hall of Fame eligibility. That, like, when you're going to be put in a – enshrined in a memorial – like of the history books and everything, like as a Hall of Fame player, you're also kind of co-signing for that person as a human being, which is, I think, like been the hesitation with Rose and the gambling stuff. Notwithstanding, he only ever bet on his team to win. But now here we are in an era of Major League Baseball and other sports leagues fully embracing sports betting, online sports betting, like to the full max, being sponsored by DraftKings, FanDuel, all of these various sites and companies that are essentially kind of controlling a portion of the sports economy at the moment. Very shady segment of the sports economy. And, you know, the fact that like Rose is, that this is happening when he's dead, I think is kind of coincidental. I do think part of it has to do with the fact that sports betting is becoming so normalized, legalized, widespread across the country. And, you know, it's there's too much hypocrisy involved to say to promote gambling and then to just completely wipe this guy's history away from the history books. I think that's kind of part of it. But this guy was also a statutory rapist, Brandon. So I don't know if we should be too excited about this. You know what I'm saying? That's the second part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, man, just to go back and touch on, you know, like, there's like a code of conduct. That's not a secret, right? That ball players have to, like, abide by. And
it's in every locker room, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. In every locker room across Major League Baseball, you walk in, there is a sign on the wall that says you must not bet on baseball. Like, it's across the league. It's well known. And if you violate that, it's kind of like, dude, you violated the terms of service. You know what I mean? If you're on Facebook and it says in the Facebook terms of service, like, you can't use certain words, and then you go use that word, don't be surprised if you get banned, you know?
No, so, that makes sense to me. So like, that's kind of part of it for me. It's like, all right, well, if you break a rule that is like known that there's a consequence, like, I get it, like, you suffer that consequence. So for him to be banned for life for like gambling, which is like a forbidden, you know, it's so taboo, and it's like you said, it's very well known, I don't really like feel any sympathy for him in that regard. And then the
other stuff,
the like statutory rape stuff, is a whole different color of like horrifying. And it's like, all right, so if I'm just separating the man from the play, it's like, all right, like, yeah, we can talk about him being the hit king and X, Y, and Z, but I mean, I didn't watch him play. He doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think
era watched him play, but even then, like, I don't, who cares? He's an old racist who's
yeah.
No, I'm fucking kidding. All due respect to the ghost of Pete Rose. Congratulations for being unbanned, but I guess words mean nothing and bans mean nothing. So he was a bad enough guy that your code of ethics stops him from being in the hall for the entirety of his life. But now that he's dead, you repeal it. It just kind of feels like a just big so there of nothing. I don't know.
Yeah, and there's also a chance, I've been seeing some baseball reporters saying that there's a chance that he faces an uphill climb of actually getting into the Hall of Fame as it is. So who knows? There's a chance he doesn't even get in. But yeah, for people that are like celebrating it, that's fine if you're celebrating it. But, you know, we do have to we do have to consider like the man is an element of this, and that there's like a pattern of behavior. Do a little history on Pete Rose and follow the pattern of behavior and tell me if that's somebody that's worth celebrating as like a Hall of Fame human being in any capacity, and then, you know, get back to me there.
And Jesse, but, that is what they mean when they say the chickens come home to roost.
So that's the saying. Okay, got it. What should we talk about? Because there's a few different angles we could go to here. You see the Tigers Red Sox game yesterday?
Dude, I watched the end of that game yesterday. I was HBO Maxing it, and I caught it, and I couldn't believe how exciting the last few innings of that game were.
Yeah.
It begs the question: is Javi Baez back? Is he good again? Is he fun? Yeah, I mean, he's fun, but is he good? Yeah.
He's actually having a pretty decent season. Here are his stats so far this year. He's hitting .309. He has 5 homers. He's got 27 ribbies, scored 20 runs. Now, yeah, he has struck out 31 times, but his chase rate is down. He's actually been a little bit better in that regard. And what a moment that was yesterday, because the Red Sox went up 9-7 in extra innings off of, I believe, a Christian Campbell 2-run home run.
Yeah, and it was sick. Super sick to over the right field wall.
Yeah, and
it
then
was electrifying. But even to get there was a great at bat in the ninth where Spencer Torkelson flies out, and they get I think Zach McKintry's on second base, and you know, they get this scratch run to tie it up in the 10th. To go to the 11th, and then, you know, you get that home run, and Boston's like, oh my god, this feels like 2 runs is too many. And, oh, for Javi to get that moment, like, dude, there was, I mean, just talk about dog piles of shit of just how bad a signing Javi has been for Detroit. And honestly, without this season, you know, 2025, it still would be, but it seems like that whole Tigers team learned how to hit, and fuck, they're fun to watch, dude. They're really good. They're having a hell of a year.
They are. You and I picked them to win the Central this year.
Ball knowers.
As of right now, they have a 3.5 game lead. They're 29-15. They have a plus +86 run differential. That is best in the American League.
Wow.
Good for the Detroit Tigers, man. A lot of that has to do with Tarik Skubal's being awesome. Casey Mize he's injured right now, but he has been. He's had a resurgence, former number one pick for the Tigers. He's been really good pitching for them. And yeah, like Torkelson has taken that leap forward that they were expecting.
Thanks, man.
And having Javi Baez perform the way he has on that contract is so critical for them, because it's taking up such a huge chunk of their payroll. You know, that's their big free agent signing that they've made in like the past like 4 or 5 years. So for him to be doing what he's doing this year, let's see if he can sustain it and just keep doing what he's doing. But that has to be good. Part of that is Javi's winning again. You know what I mean? Like, Javi's winning again. The Tigers have not been good for the past 4 years that Javi's been there, 3 years, whatever it's been. And so he's kind of like, he got his money. He checked out a little bit. Dude was having highlight reels for the wrong reasons. So it's like swinging at pitches, dude, 4 feet out of the zone, and like making fucking pitching ninja highlights and shit. That's not where you want to be.
Yeah.
And he came up first pitch, smokes it over left field wall, got the walk off. Just a great moment. It's good to have him back. It's good to have people talking about Javi again.
I believe in that game, so he had 2 3-run home runs.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, hey, they just swept the Boston Red Sox, you know, a team I think we predicted.
Did they win today?
They did win today.
Skubal was good, and then he kind of got he kind of fell apart in the seventh inning, so I didn't see what happened. But yeah, okay, yeah, Tigers 6-5. Look at that.
There they go, man.
So
there was also a little fun moment in this game between Alex Bregman and your boy Tarik Skubal. Skubal was yelling at Bregman from the dugout to take a pitch. So Bregman does, and then on the second pitch, ropes a single into center. And then I believe at his second at-bat, hit a home run. I guess Bregman has something like 6 hits off of Skubal, and all of them are off the first or second pitch of the at-bat.
Yeah.
So just a fun little interplay between pros, and like, I don't know, I just think Skubal is just so rad that like, even a guy that's competing that hard is like, you know, having fun when somebody kind of gets one on him, you know what I mean?
Well, it makes perfect sense to me that a good hitter like Bregman, who's having an awesome season, by the way, like he has been so good for the Red Sox that it's kind of a shame that they've been off to as mediocre of a start as they have been. They're under 500 now, which is pretty rough, but Skubal is so good that he throws so many strikes that you kind of have to get at him early, and the fact that Bregman's had as much success as he has, just a testament to how good that guy is. So I guess we're kind of out of topics here, but there's a few things, a little rundown I want to do just to, it's a new segment I want to introduce. It's called Bob's Blurbs. Cause I was telling you guys earlier in the episode that I was reading a Bob Nightingale article on Pete Alonso. And at the bottom, I saw these little awesome blurbs that he does, just little factoids and nuggets that he throws into his articles. And here was one. The Pittsburgh Pirates, according to information received by the Players Union and confirmed by several owners, are one of the most profitable teams in all of baseball, stashing a huge chunk of their revenue-sharing money instead of investing it in their team year after year. Brandon, any surprise at all?
Dude, you can literally see it with the product in between the lines. What are we talking about? They draft great. They develop these super talented players, and then they trade them for nothing.
Yep.
And then they sign nobody to support the talent that they've developed. And it's just this vicious cycle.
They even save money on like their fan giveaways, like with the Paul Skeens one of one card or whatever that kid had. Yeah.
They were going to give the kid like
season tickets behind home plate for 20 years, by the way.
Yeah.
It was like if you, I think like somebody crunched the numbers on that and that the card would have been worth like three times what the offer was from the Pirates. They're just penny pinchers over there. They spend more money on their accountants than they do on their player development, on their front office facilities, not front office facilities, but their baseball facilities, on their front office, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They are a cheap bullshit organization and nobody should support them until they get ownership out of town. The Dodgers, another one of Bob's blurbs, the Dodgers are holding back Shohei Ohtani from pitching until after the All-Star break, believing there's no sense in hurrying him to the mound while he continues to put up MVP numbers at the plate. This spawned a conversation on another podcast with Jared Carrabas and Dallas Braden, where Carrabas said that he doesn't think we're ever going to see Shohei pitch again. Brandon, tell me why he's out of his mind.
My boy's just got too much fake news going on. A lot of buzz in these streets. And
I think that was hot take stuff. He was trying to get some clickbait material out there.
Look, I dig it and I vibe it. I like cutting a good promo, you know what I mean? And nothing better in a promo than something incendiary just like that. I just think, just like with, you know, Yamamoto last year when they shut him down for a while with shoulder inflammation or discomfort, I forget exactly which, but they're signed to long contracts, decades plus, and I don't think there's much need or desire in the organization to push somebody with a history of arm injury into an early return when, Jesse, sometimes in life, anticipation can just be so exquisite. And it's a lot hotter.
Whoa.
It's a lot hotter to tease that big payoff
so you're than saying
to already let them know that it can't happen, dude. Just so like you're a stripper who's telling you that they're almost off in another hour. You know what I mean? Maybe the Dodgers are playing us after all. Dude, I'm talking myself out of this.
So you're saying that the Dodgers front office are edging us right now?
I think they might be edging us, but I just don't think they're doing that. I think that that's a little too creative. But I just wanted to play a little devil's advocate right there.
No, you might be right. I mean, I think that Shohei's going to pitch again. He's obviously going to pitch again. Like, to what degree he does is maybe up for debate. But the idea that we'll never see him on the mound again is patently ludicrous and
ludicrous. Yeah,
there's no chance in hell that's going to happen. I mean, the Dodgers
ludicrous. Yeah,
the Dodgers made a huge investment, and this is what it does for ticket sales to have Shohei pitching 10 times a year. You wouldn't even believe the impact that has financially for the team, and he's going to pitch again.
Hold on real quick. I just want to say this before we move away. I am just also really into the idea of Shohei as a closer 2026.
That's totally possible too. I could see it happen. Speaking, we just went off the Pirates to the Dodgers, two different teams who could not be more opposite on how they spend money. Well, here's the final Bob Blur before we end the episode. You think the Dodgers spend a lot of money? The Dodgers are the first team to use two planes on all of their road trips. Ooh. One that is restricted to only the players, costing the team a minimum of at least $6 million. So they're spending money on another plane for like family members, for staff, where there's like one plane, where normally teams have everybody on one plane. The Dodgers are spending money for two. So wow. they are fully making a financial investment on this team being as well taken care of as humanly possible. So I just thought that was a fun little factoid because I did not know that until I read this. Brandon,
Cassie, did you know that there is another major sport in the United States of America where teams typically fly with two planes? I'll give you two guesses, Jesse, but you'll only need one. What sport is it?
There's only one other sport in the United States?
Yeah.
Football?
It is football, Jesse.
Yeah, has to be.
When you think of a roster being typically around like 50 guys, plus yeah. ancillary staff, coaches, wives, players, chefs, just all everything, you know, it's two planes typically, if not always. So, Jess, what my point is that the Dodgers are playing in a different tax bracket. They're making that fucking Alabama fucking money, dude. Mm-hmm. Let's go, dude.
That's why Shohei's gonna pitch again, is because they're gonna have three team planes next time we fucking... When Shohei's pitching a full season, three team planes.
Hey, one plane full of Japanese players. Yeah. One plane full of the Dominican players. Well, they're gonna just... Well, nope, we're getting a little segregated. That's accidental racism on my...
Yeah, take it easy, Pete Rose. All right, buddy. Oh, this dude. Has been... The 50th episode of Deferred Collusion. Thank you guys, wow. as always, for your support. We are halfway to the century mark. Tune in, share with your friends, share with your wife, with your husband, whatever way you swing, we don't care. Just come join us. Brando,
watch it with
one.
Your cat. Leave it on for your dogs when you go to work. We're here. And just right before we go, shouts out to Freddie Freeman, 222 OPS plus on the season, 1.145 OPS. To a 714 slug. Our king has got a 366 batting average. I just want to shout out Freddie, just showing that you can still do it in your mid to late 30s.
Oh, hey, yeah.
So for all my over-the-hill kings out there, you still got it going on. If Freddie can do it, so can you.
Absolutely. Giving me life, dude. I'm like 2 years older than Freddie. I haven't accomplished a tenth of what he's accomplished, but he's given me life, Brandon.
Right? Hey, if your elbow is still hurting, you know, just think about what he went through with that ankle, dude, and you can get through it, dude. We got this, Jeff. Yeah. So, babies, for Deferred Collusion, your boy Brandon, my host with the most, Jesse Rowe, we love you. We'll see you next time. Oh, I'm juicing on this.
Yep. Ringwork.